To share my history with manhole covers. This started about 15 years ago. I was visiting a friend in England, in Topsham, England, which is down in Devon County, which is the southwestern part of England. And we were sitting in the backyard in the evening visiting with friends. And I asked what if I stayed here longer, what might I do to make some extra money? And somebody talked about a fellow from the States who came over and did brass rubbings in churches and then took them back to the States and sold them. And that really didn't resonate with me. I didn't, I didn't care, you know. But the next day, I was just out walking in the village, a small village, and all of a sudden I just started noticing all the different designs on the manhole covers. Just, you know, and I decided then, I says, you know, people have done tombstone rubbings and brass rubbings in churches and temple rubbings. I'm gonna do manhole cover rubbings. And that evening, we were all getting together again, having drinks, and I told people, I declared, I said, you know, people have done these kinds of rubbings. I says, I'm going to do manhole cover rubbings. And they all laughed. But I was committed. And I told them, I said, okay, you go ahead and laugh, but you keep your eyes open. And so about 3 weeks later, I went up to Chicago for a low vision conference, and when I was there, the hotel was close to an art store, and I went down to the art store, and I got some paper about this big, and a graphite stick, a stick about this long, hexagonal stick, and at night, I went out into the streets. And I would try to get as far away from the curb as I could. You know, I would trying to get as close as I could to the buildings, trying to find a safe cover to rub. But, you know, in about 4 months after that, I was down in Manhattan on main streets of Manhattan, taping my paper over covers and looking at the lights and working it. And then when it's almost green, I'd get back and cars would drive over my covers and stuff. You know, I have covers with big tire treads over the covers and stuff. It's just really cool. I love that. And so that was my experience doing that. And the reason I was at a low vision conference is that in 1989, I created the world's first line of Braille jewelry. And the textural element on my pieces is actually Braille, and they have different messages. And I'm very proud to say that one of my pair, it's a fan-shaped pair, and one says Harmony and the other says Serenity, have been placed in the permanent collection of the Smithsonian Institute. Yay! And as soon as I found that out, I called my mom. I said, hey, Mom, guess what? The Christensen family is in the Smithsonian, you know? And I thought that was so cool because I remember as a little kid, you know, seeing the Kitty Hawk, and because we all went there one time. And you know, I'm not there because I'm a great artist, but I created a new branch of the tree of jewelry, and so that's why I'm there. So that was fun. As a result of the Braille jewelry, I started doing conferences all over the U.S. and Canada, going to low vision conferences, selling my jewelry. And every time I would get to the conference, well, as soon as I started doing my rubbings, I had my materials all in a tube. Everything I needed, and whenever I'd go to a low vision conference, I'd take all my materials with me, and as soon as I get to the hotel, I'd ask the concierge, where's the oldest part of town? And so then, when at the end of the conference, when everybody was coming down from the conference into the bar, I was on my way out the door with my tubes, heading for the oldest part of town to find old covers that I could rub. As a result, I have about 140 covers from the U.S., England, France, and Canada. And I would never be able to have collected all those had it not been for the Braille jewelry. I tape my paper right down on the streets, right over the covers, and then I articulate the design with my hands. I get down and feel everything to see where everything is, and then I take my and I decide how I want to rub the covers. Thank you very much. I decide how I want to rub the covers. You know, do I all want to go towards the center from all the edge, or do I want to go the same way? And anyway, that's how that works out. And then later on, as I'm so moved, then I will add color to the pieces, and that's always fun too. The when I got back from Chicago, I was living over here on Hobson Road, and I showed my work from Chicago to my friends, and they were really taken by it. And they said, "Kim, you've got to do some local covers so you can show and put up a show someplace so you can share them with the community." And so I ended up having a show. I did a collection, and I had a show at Lou's Restaurant. And it turned out that they were getting a permanent photographic exhibit that was going to go up, but they said they didn't know how long it was going to be, but I could put my work up until that was ready. And it wasn't, it took the guy doing the show 3.5 months to get ready. And so I had a show at Lou's for 3.5 months with all my covers up there. It was just crazy. You know, it was so much fun. And everybody who would come in would always ask, they would tell me that they never really noticed the covers before and they thought they were all the same. And but now that they've seen my work, they'll never not notice. And it made me ponder how we get so busy in our daily activities that we often overlook the beauty in our surroundings and each other, and most importantly, in ourselves. And the and that was very important to me. Also, besides the show that I had at Lou's, I had a show behind the post office in Hanover. And there was a big showroom of Oriental carpets, and they went out of business. And I thought, gosh, what an opportunity to have all my work up at the same time. And I talked to the owner of the building, and he said, sure, you could put a show up. Then when it was time to take it down, I had to do a low vision conference in Houston. When I got back, I told him before I left, I said, can I take it down when I get back? And he said, you know, it looks so nice with your work up rather than all the empty wall space. Why don't you just keep it up until I rent the place? And so he didn't rent his place for another 3.5 months. It's just like Lou's. So I ended up moving my workbench and everything into that space. And that's where I did all my work, and I had all my work up there. And right next to that space was the headquarters, or the showroom for Pompanoosic Mills, the high-end furniture manufacturer. And one time I was in my space, and these two fellows in suits came in and started looking at my rubbings and getting up close and then moving back and shaking their heads and stuff. Then they came up to me and they said, you know, we really appreciate your work. It's so different and so unique. And we're opening up a brand new showroom down in Tribeca in Lower Manhattan. And would you be interested in displaying your work throughout our showroom for a 2-month period of time? And I said, well, yes. And that was just amazing. I went down there and put up my work throughout the showroom. And, you know, it was fabulous. People just loved it. And one friend of mine who saw the show had moved down to Washington, D.C., and she was working in a gallery down there. And she said, you should contact the gallery about the possibility of showing your work. And so I sent some images down to the gallery with a note and stuff. And the gallery owner said that she didn't think it was really the right fit for the gallery. She didn't think it would work for the gallery. But she had a contract to provide art to the lobby of the Securities and Exchange Commission building in D.C. They had an opening in 2 months. And would I be interested in showing my work at the headquarters of the SEC in Washington, D.C.? Once again, I said, yes. I've just really been blessed with these opportunities. You know, they just keep showing up. And So I did the show, but you know, when I first went in, it's just, when you walk into the SEC lobby, it's huge. And there's these big granite columns going up, and then, you know, when you go past the checkpoint, then you go around, and then there's a big stairway that goes up to the second floor, and then there's a railing, that where you can look down at this vast lobby. And so I had Prince going up the grand columns, all those columns, and then I had a level of my rubbings all around the walls, but as a normal gallery would have. But the height of the lobby was so tall that I had a whole second level that I had to put up. They gave me a hydraulic lift, and I had a hydraulic lift that I actually controlled by myself, and would take the lift up, and I put a whole second row of rubbings in the lobby. And it was sensational. We had all kinds of folks there, and it was really, it really was a lot of fun. I've had a number of really interesting experiences doing my rubbings, and I'm going to share a few of them with you. The first one was in Louisville, Kentucky. I was doing a low vision conference there, and I went out in the evening looking for covers, and I found a cover. It's the oldest cover I've ever done, and it could be the oldest in the U.S. I think it is, actually. It was a French cover that was done around 1865. It was very detailed, and I had to actually get canvas because you had to push down, and the paper couldn't do that. And it was also outside, just right outside of the oldest continually operating blues club in the United States. And I love the blues. I play the blues harp. But it was just amazing. It took me 4 hours to do this cover, but it was great. I was doing the cover, this great music coming out, and people would come out to ask what I was doing, and we'd all visit, and they'd bring out beers and stuff. And so it was a fantastic experience. One of the others was in St. Louis. So often, you know, when if the police ever drive up, because here's this guy down on the street doing a rubbing or something, they don't even know what I'm doing, and they come up and say, "Well, what are you doing?" You know, and when I explain to them, then they lighten up and they go, "Oh, wow, I've never heard of that before," you know. And the first guys in the morning in St. Louis, I was doing this cover, and they came up and we, you know, exchanged information. And then they said, "Well, listen, there's a construction site just down the road, and they have these cones, these orange cones. So why don't you go down and get those cones and bring them back and put them around your work so to keep you safe?" And so I did that, and that was really nice of them. And then a little later that same day in St. Louis, I was up at another location where I had seen this cover. And I was doing the cover, and this black female officer drove up in her car and asked me, "Well, what are you doing?" Like they always do. And I told her, and she goes, "Oh, wow." She says, "You know, my mother used to get old leather books that had all the ornamentation on the cover of the books, and she would rub these books." And she said, "You know, gosh sakes, this is so interesting. How long is it going to take you to do this?" You know, I said, "Oh, about 20 minutes. And she said, "Well, why don't I just park here to make sure you're safe and stuff?" So I would say the most interesting of all the different rubbings experiences like these that I had was, I had just finished a low vision conference in Jacksonville, Florida, and I was on the bus heading to Tallahassee, the capital of Florida. And I was going along in the bus, and I notice covers much more than anybody. I really do. Wherever I am, I thought, "Oh, well, look at that one," you know. So we were driving along, and I saw this cover, and it was really interesting. And the bus was, you know, continuing on. But when we got to the bus station, that cover was right in the middle of the intersection, right outside of the bus station. But that intersection was 24/7. I mean, it was completely busy 24 hours a day. So I knew there was no way that I was going to be able to rub that cover. But I thought, well, maybe down the road, I might be able to find the same cover, you know, if it's part of the system or whatever. And so I started walking down the road. I put my materials, my backpack and stuff, in a locker, and so I had my rubbings and my tubes and stuff. And I started walking down the road, and I started noticing all these mansions alongside the road. And it turns out that they were all the headquarters of special interest groups that were based in the capital, so they could do the lobbying and stuff for their special interests. So I kept going down the road, going down the block, didn't see anything. And finally, I got towards the end of this road, and there was the road stopped, and there was another road going perpendicular to it. And then just beyond that was a big gate and a fence. And I put my rubbings materials aside, and you could walk around and go inside this compound. And so I walked around and went inside, and then there was this big mansion there with a sign that said, "This is the governor's mansion." And that was Jeb Bush at the time when I was there. And so I was really taken by that. And then I came back out and got down and started looking at this cover. And there was no traffic, so I could get down, because I always really discover what's going on with the covers, as I was doing with this one, and checking it out and getting close and all this and that. And then I went back to get my materials to start doing my rubbing. And as I was getting my stuff, I glanced back to the gate there, and the gate was opening up. And this big black car was coming out of the gate, slowly coming out of the gate. And it came down to where I was. The window goes down, and this officer inside said, "Will you please get in the car?" And I said, "Yeah, I will, you know." And I get in the car, and he's got a major 45 strapped to his ankle. You know, I mean, the guy's really serious about the situation. And once again, you know, by the grace of God, he says, "What were you doing?" He said, "We all saw you up in security, and we saw you looking at this cover, and what are you actually up to here, you know?" And I told him, I said, "Well, here's what I'm doing. I manhole covers." He says, "No kidding?" He said, "Boy, just 2 weeks ago, my wife and I went to Italy, and we were so taken by the wooden manhole covers from Rome, you know?" And he starts telling me this whole story about he and his wife, you know? I mean, he could have just nailed me right at that point, you know? And he told me this whole story, and then he says, "Listen, I'll call the guys back in headquarters and tell them you're okay. And you go ahead and rub that cover, and just make sure you're safe, and don't try not to take too long, but you're good to go, you know?" So I've had some really very fortunate experiences in that way. In early 2015, I was contemplating the word happiness, and I was thinking, what if each of the letters of the word happiness were the first letters of words that, when read in sequence, what would they be? And I had in my mind the word happiness reading vertically down, and I just sat back into the zone, you know, and just kind of let everything go and kind of meditated. And just in about 10 minutes, all the words filled in. And what filled in was having all positive possibilities internally nestled, entirely soulfully safe. Once again, having all positive possibilities internally nestled, entirely soulfully safe. I was blown away. I looked at it and went, "Oh my goodness." And I ended up turning it into a book. If you go to contacthappiness.com, you can see 25 pages of the book. And I wrote an article in the book. It's a combination of my work and my thoughts and also other people's. And one article that I wrote was called "What is My Anonymous?" What comes to mind is the person standing up to speak in front of an audience of peers and starting out by saying, my name is, and I'm an alcoholic. Or it could be, my name is, and I'm addicted to drugs. When I woke up this morning, I was thinking about the negative patterns I have been choosing to guide my life, and I wondered what I would say if I was standing in front of a group of peers. Quote, hello, my name is Kim Christensen, and I'm a recovering human being. I think of a vast audience of people of various walks of life, of varying ages, men and women, all there looking at me with a sense of empathy and nodding their heads in understanding, saying to themselves, yeah, brother, I may not know exactly what yours is, but I know what you mean. We really are all in this together. I'd like to sing a song that I wrote that I use as a reminder at times about living my life, and it may have some meaning to you. It's called Sometimes I'm Up, Sometimes I'm Down. Well, sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down, but I know my feet still meet on the ground. Well, it's so nice to remember throughout the day. No matter how you're feeling, deep down, you're still okay. Well, you shouldn't let the little changes wreck your stay. It's a long-term movement gonna clear your way. Well, there's still time, don't you forget it. You can always find change, you don't need to quit it. There's hard times, oh, it's a low-down true. But the base of all action is still inside you. Well, you shouldn't let the little changes wreck your view. It's a long-term movement gonna pull you through. Get on now. Do, 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 yeah, yeah. Oh, it's a long-term movement, yeah. Oh, it's a long-term movement, yeah. Oh, it's a long-term movement. You shouldn't let the little changes wreck your stay. It's a long-term movement gonna clear your way. Oh, don't hold back if you really wanna kick it. You're already on the track and you don't need a ticket. It's an old game that you don't have to play. No, no, no. It's not all your blame, so you don't always have to pay. No, no, no. Well, you shouldn't let the little changes wreck your stay. It's a long-term movement gonna clear your way. You shouldn't let the little changes wreck your stay. It's a long-term movement gonna clear your way. You shouldn't let the little changes wreck your stay. It's a long-term movement gonna clear your way. Thank you. I actually love that song. I sing it a lot, actually. Whenever people see my work, they always tell me that they never really noticed the covers before. They thought they were all the same. But now that they've seen my work, they'll never not notice. And it made me ponder and realize how we treat each other the same way. And we get so busy that we overlook the beauty in our surroundings. And so often, I'll go through my day dealing with different people and not really noting how they're different than anybody else. And I thought about what people said about my covers, and it made me start to pay closer attention to what makes that individual different than the other one. And it really was a nice realization. And so often when I'm in social gatherings, I used to always just ask people, oh, what kind of work do you do? And one time I decided I'm going to start asking people what are their interests. So when I would be talking with them, I'd say, oh, what are your interests? And it would sort of take them back a bit, you know, and they would ponder and And then they would tell me, you know, the little things about their family or this and that, you know. And then they would ask me the same question usually, and we'd get in a nice conversation that was very meaningful. I read some quotes the other day about laughter, and I mentioned this because I learned that if you can include some kind of humor in a conversation, that it will do a lot to create connection. And I read some quotes that I would like to share about humor. And the first is from John Cleese, the great comedian and co-founder of Monty Python. And he said, quote, "Laughter connects you with people. It's almost impossible to maintain any kind of distance or sense of social hierarchy when two people are howling with laughter. Laughter is a force for democracy." The other quote is from Victor Borgia, a great pianist and comedian, and he said, "Laughter is the shortest distance between two people." I love that. Thinking that I'd like to include some laughter in my presentation, I did a quick Google and found a church bulletin that had these two announcements. The first is, "The ladies of the church have cast off clothing of every kind." They can be seen in the basement on Friday morning from, from 10 till 2. And the second one read, "The low esteem support group will meet Thursday at 7 p.m. Please enter through the back door." Eric Tolle, a highly regarded philosopher, shared, "We are not the conditions of our lives, but we are the space within which those conditions take place. And that space is pure and good, and that is the essence of us all." He reminds us that as we go through our day getting overly wrapped up in our conditions, we can draw back into that space and become an observer to regain more objectivity, and by so doing, re-enter with greater clarity. Creating little moments of clarity can give us new perspective and appreciation of those around us and ourselves. So, what do manhole covers have to do with our sense of personal happiness? In the same way that we overlook the beauty in the covers, we in our daily lives overlook the beauty in the people around us, and most importantly, ourselves. And how can we change this? One way is by taking brief moments throughout our day to stop and settle ourselves, to relax for a moment so we can regain the clarity that can allow us to more deeply connect. Let's take a minute now to do a little exercise, and this actually only takes a half a minute, and if you think you could find a half a minute a day to do this, it might help. We're going to just take three nice deep breaths and then just relax. So if you can just kind of relax yourself, we'll go ahead and start. So inhale and exhale. Inhale. And exhale. And one last time. Inhale. And exhale. Great. In conclusion, I would like to share a true story that reminded me of this practice and made a positive difference in my life, and may also do the same for you. A high-powered executive woman in Los Angeles needed to get out of town, and she wanted to go out to Palm Desert for a long weekend, and she wanted to get on the road about 12 o'clock on Thursday. But she got busy, as she always was, and didn't get on the road till about 3:30, and when she did get on the road, it was already filled with traffic. She was driving down, and then all of a sudden, she noticed that all the traffic had stopped in front of her. And she jammed on her brakes, and her car skidded and swerved and skidded and swerved, and finally she stopped just 4 inches from behind the car in front of her. And she was so relieved. And she looked up in her rearview mirror and saw a car bearing down on her that was going so fast, she knew that there was no way that it was going to be able to stop. She knew that it was going to crush her. And she saw how tightly she was gripping the wheel of her car. And she said to herself, regardless of the short amount of time I have to live, I'm going to take control of my life. And she just completely let go of the wheel and took a nice deep breath to relax. And the car crushed her. And when the jaws of life came out to cut open the car to remove the body, they cut open the car and they found her with just cuts and bruises laying in the car. They lifted her out of the car and she was able to stand next to the car. And when they took her to the emergency room, to the surgeon that's always receives the bodies from these kinds of accidents, when she got there, he told her, he said, every time any body is brought to me, it's completely shattered. And he said, the only way you could have survived that crash is if you were completely relaxed. And she told him her story. And it reminds me of what a positive impact a deep, relaxing breath can have in our lives. So, breathe. Notice the beauty in your surroundings, each other, and yourself. Thank you. Okay. And now we will extinguish the chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of love, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we meet again. Thank you. And greet your neighbor, and stay, and we'll have refreshments and visitation. Thank you.
Never fail to amaze me. That was really wonderful. Kim.
Oh, thank you so much.
It was great.
Oh,
and
thanks.
You have to join the choir.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have, actually.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
I'm a regular member now.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I missed the last couple of Sundays.
So. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah.
It was a great song, and I remember your jewelry and your rubbing.
Uh-huh.
I think you must have just been starting that.
That's right.
When we met.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Oh, thanks
you.
A lot, Kathy.
No, maybe sometime I'll bring them.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. But, you know, now I'm sure everybody's very interested to see some of them.
Yeah.
I'll share with you how I spend my time.
Oh, okay. Boy, you really, that's fantastic. God. That is so great. You know, I love to do little stuff. Yeah.
I find it sick a lot. It started mostly when I was in the legislature, since I was listening to people say things that I didn't want to hear.
Oh, yeah. That's a great escape, isn't it?
It was a great escape.
Oh, absolutely.
That's great.
I have a, I don't have it with me, but I, in my happiness book, I have a page that says, love your doodles, and it shows one of my doodles.
I have a whole, full of